Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. Hundreds of migrants streamed into the European Union Wednesday through the cornfields of Croatia. They were welcomed there after Hungary blocked its border with Serbia and fired tear gas and sprayed water cannon at migrants still trying to enter its territory. A Hungarian court convicted an Iraqi man of illegally crossing the border fence with Serbia the day before, ordered him expelled and excluded him from Hungary for a year. Croatian Prime Minister Zoran Milanovic criticized Hungary's actions and said his country is prepared for the influx of migrants fleeing Syria and other war-torn Middle East countries. Reporter Henry Ridgewell is in Serbia, heading towards the Croatian border.
The new border controls have been enforced on the Hungarian-Serbian border for just over 24 hours. That has dramatically had an impact on the number of migrants coming over, and there are probably around 1,000 migrants now camped out waiting at the key crossing point between Serbia and Hungary, a place called Rozce. They are slowly dispersing, slowly making their way along the Hungarian border, perhaps looking for any weaknesses in the link.
As the migrants walked into Croatia from Serbia's western border, authorities urgently dispatched demining experts to the border to mark minefields left from the Balkan Wars of the 1990s. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad blamed Western nations for the surge of refugees who've left his country and made their way to Europe, saying the West had supported terrorism since the beginning of the Syrian crisis. The Syrian conflict has forced half of Syrians from their homes. This is VOA News. A Yemeni government spokesman says Yemen's cabinet has returned to the country after months spent in self-imposed exile in Saudi Arabia. The spokesman said on Wednesday the cabinet ministers will work out of the southern port city of Aden with a goal of restoring stability to the country. There was no indication that President Abd Rabbo Mansour Hadi was set to return. He fled Yemen earlier this year as Shiite Houthi rebels closed in on his refuge in Aden. Chinese President Xi Jinping next week will make his first state visit to the U.S., a White House statement confirmed on Tuesday. The trip comes at a time of increasing disagreement between Washington and Beijing. The statement said that the visit, which follows U.S. President Barack Obama's trip to Beijing in November, will include a lavish state dinner at the White House that will be attended by the spouses of both leaders. The United Nations released a report Wednesday saying Sri Lanka cannot rely on its own justice system and instead should use a special court to achieve accountability for violations that took place during the country's 26-year civil war. The recommendation came as part of a report on what the UN Human Rights Office said were possible war crimes and crimes against humanity during the conflict that pitted government forces against rebels seeking independence from the nation's Tamil minority. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raed Al Hussein, is the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights.
The report lays bare the horrific level of violations and abuses, including the indiscriminate shelling, extrajudicial killings, and enforced disappearances.
The fighting killed up to 100,000 people, according to widely accepted estimates. Sri Lanka, the report said, should look to the way other countries have used international judges, prosecutors, lawyers, and investigators. Billionaire businessman and media personality Donald Trump will be center stage among 11 top contenders at Wednesday's second 2016 Republican presidential debate at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library near Los Angeles. Retired brain surgeon Ben Carson has steadily risen in voter opinion polls over the last month and is in a strong second place behind Trump. No drones will be allowed in New York, Washington, or Philadelphia later this month when Pope Francis visits the faithful in those cities. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration announced that all unmanned aircraft will be prohibited in those places, as well as their surrounding communities, from September 22nd through September 27th. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight, the number of migrants crossing illegally into Hungary drops steeply, while a few dozen were reported to have crossed into Croatia from Serbia. President Muhammadu Buhari says his government is negotiating with militant Boko Haram for the release of more than 200 schoolgirls. And Mexico's foreign minister arrives in Cairo today to learn more about the accidental bombing of and resulting deaths of eight Mexican tourists. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Sierra Leone, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the number of migrants crossing illegally into Hungary dropped steeply today, while a few dozen were reported to have crossed into Croatia from Serbia. The Hungarian government said today that only 366 illegal entrants were rounded up the first day of operation for Hungary's strict new laws punishing people who enter the country illegally. On Monday, police said a record 9,380 migrants crossed into Hungary. Meanwhile, a few dozen migrants were seen entering Croatia from Serbia yesterday, and Croatia's interior minister said in a television broadcast discussion that Croatia has preparations in place for the migrants and will enact an emergency plan if needed. Hungarian officials yesterday closed two official border crossings because of what they said were inadequate controls on the Serbian side. Hungary also declared a state of emergency in two southern counties. Hundreds of migrants pressed against the new barrier and demanded that they be allowed in. A young Pakistani man, Zabiullah, stuck on the Serbian side of the border, told VOA he wanted the police to let him cross over to Germany. He insisted that he would stay at the border until he was allowed to pass. In Berlin, German Chancellor Angela Merkel called for a special summit to address the migrant crisis and urged European solidarity. President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria told the French news agency his government is negotiating with militant Boko Haram for the release of more than 200 schoolgirls. The students were abducted more than a year ago from the town of Chibok and have not been heard from since. While meeting with President Francois Hollande and other French officials in Paris this week, Buhari says he is offering amnesty for some militants now in government custody of Boko Haram leaders if they will release the girls. In Nigeria, the Associated Press wire service says a Nigerian military official has announced the rescue of at least a dozen women and children after taking control of Boko Haram camp in Borno State. Colonel Sani Kukusheka says the abductees were rescued yesterday. He did not say where they had been abducted or what their condition is. Since his May election, Mr. Buhari has found it difficult to end Boko Haram's reign of terror. Thousands of Nigerians have died and more than a million have been displaced by the violence in three northeastern states and in neighboring countries. Meanwhile, living spaces and office buildings continue to sprout all over Nigeria to meet the needs of a growing population. But many of these buildings are built with no oversight or substandard materials, leading to collapses that experts say could be avoided. Chris Stein reports from Lagos.
Nearly a year to the day after a large dormitory under construction collapsed in the Lagos suburb, another building collapse claimed lives in Nigeria. This time it was an Islamic school in the village of Bukuru in north-central Plateau State. Six people were killed, five of them children. It was raining, and the roof of the two-story school fell on students studying inside. A local leader, Bala Muhammad, told VOA that though villagers were aware that the building was structurally unsound, there was no other school in the area. Experts say substandard materials and shoddy oversight have led to numerous building collapses in Africa's most populous country. Last year's dormitory collapse at the church of megapastor T.B. Joshua was among the deadliest, claiming 116 lives. Habu Maman is an engineer in the city of Bauchi, about 200 kilometers from Bukuru. He says some building contractors use poor techniques or materials, like improper cement grades, and pay off inspectors.
The oversight that is provision is very, very poor, and they are in most cases compromised.
Authorities elsewhere in Nigeria have managed to make progress against faulty buildings. Ibrahim Ferenloy is the Southwest Regional Coordinator for the National Emergency Management Agency. His jurisdiction includes Africa's largest city, Lagos. He says in 2012 and 2013, there were about 52 building collapses in the Southwest. But that number has decreased since his agency began urging residents to report substandard buildings.
We, at a time within 6 months, we got an alert of about 500 information about different type of building under distress situation.
Still, buildings keep coming down. Since the dormitory collapsed last September, Ferenloy says 5 buildings in his area have partially collapsed. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, Mexico's foreign minister arrived in Cairo today. She will question President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi about circumstances surrounding the accidental bombing of and resulting deaths of 8 Mexican tourists by Egyptian forces. 4 Egyptians were also among the dead. Foreign Minister Claudia Ruiz Massu has called deplorable the aerial attack and deaths of a dozen tourists on a safari in Egypt's western desert. Ruiz and members of families of the Mexican victims visited survivors this morning at Dar al-Fa'ud Hospital. She said she flew to Egypt to meet to seek clarification of the events from Egyptian officials and to return survivors and the 8 deceased back to Mexico. There were 22 passengers, Mexicans and Egyptians, in the convoy. 10 were wounded. The vehicles were destroyed. Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry says the government will investigate the matter. Shoukry said the facts of the military attack are confusing. Egyptian authorities earlier claimed the safari convoy had not requested permission to enter a restricted territory. The government has been pursuing Islamic State terrorists in the region. A provincial governor in central Burundi has told the Associated Press more than 100 men have been arrested in the last 2 days as suspected recruits to a rebel movement. Venant Manirambona of Gitega province says the men were arrested yesterday and today as they tried to relocate to the southern part of the nation. No rebel group has been identified, but the government claims recent rebel attacks on military outposts. Burundi has been in political turmoil over President Pierre Nkurunziza's re-election to a third term. The government says it has put down one coup attempt. More than 100 have died in street clashes in Bujumbura, the capital. Stephen Mondo of the UN Refugee Agency says hundreds of civilians have recently been fleeing to neighboring countries as clashes escalate in Bujumbura. UN officials estimate more than 180,000 Burundians have fled the country in the last 5 months. Zimbabwe's opposition is calling for President Robert Mugabe to resign, saying he is no longer fit for office. This comes one day after the 91-year-old president read the wrong speech to parliament. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
The president's office issued an apology Tuesday after the president delivered a speech he had already read in parliament 3 weeks before. His office said the president would deliver the correct speech to lawmakers Wednesday. But Zimbabwe's main opposition party said the mistake could not be overlooked so easily. Here is Obed Gutu, spokesman for the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, speaking to journalists on Wednesday.
With respect to our president, at the very good ripe age of 91, I think he has seen better days, and it's a clear indication that he is no longer fit for purpose. And in fact, if Zimbabwe was a functional democracy, Parliament should actually proceed to invoke Section 96 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe. He should actually be impeached. He's now unable, clearly unable, to discharge his duties as the head of state.
Opposition MPs are also demanding the government explain how the president came to read the wrong speech. In the end, Mugabe did not come to Parliament Wednesday. Instead, Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa came and asked lawmakers to withdraw the wrong speech from the official record and place it with the correct one. There's virtually no chance the president will heed the calls for him to step down. Mugabe has ruled Zimbabwe with an iron hand since the country won independence from Great Britain 35 years ago. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Well, Zimbabwe authorities have filed smuggling charges against the safari guide who earlier helped a U.S. dentist kill Cecil, a protected black-maned lion popular among visitors to Hwange National Park. Police arrested Theo Bronkhurst in Bulawayo yesterday for allegedly trying to smuggle 29 sable antelope into South Africa. He is to appear in court today. Bronkhorst and three South Africans were captured by Zimbabwe park authorities when the vehicles containing the wild antelope became mired in the mud of the Limpopo River. Parks authorities say the antelope are worth $384,000 in the illicit South African market. In July, Bronkhorst served as safari guide for dentist James Walter Palmer when park authorities say they lured Cecil out of the protection of a national park to kill him. Bronkhorst faces the earlier charges at a September 28th trial. Rights group Amnesty International has launched a report titled Human Rights Under Fire: Attacks and Violations in Cameroon's Struggle with Boko Haram. The report says 400 civilians have been killed and that a heavy-handed response by security forces and inhumane prison conditions have led to dozens of more deaths. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Yaoundé.
Amnesty International's researcher for Central Africa, Ilaria Alegrose, says both Boko Haram insurgents and Cameroonian soldiers fighting terrorism have caused great suffering.
We talk about killings, we talk about kidnappings, we talk about destruction, widespread destruction of public and private properties.
Amnesty says Boko Haram has killed nearly 380 people in northern Cameroon since mid-2014. Militants have also burned hundreds of homes. Alegrozi says although security forces have played a very important role protecting civilians, they are at the same time also committing abuses.
There's killings, destruction of properties, arbitrary arrests, and also inhuman prison conditions, especially in Maroua, where you have a population of some 1,300 prisoners. Half of them are Boko Haram suspected, and they live in very difficult conditions. The prison is overcrowded, there's lack of hygiene and lack of health care. Some of the prisoners are even held in chains till today.
Amnesty says 130 men and boys have disappeared at the hands of Cameroonian soldiers and 25 have died in custody. The rights group is calling for international investigations. Cameroon's government spokesman declined to comment on the report Wednesday, saying authorities are preparing their response. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The number of illegal migrants crossing into Hungary dropped steeply, while a few dozen were reported to have crossed into Croatia from Serbia. Amnesty International launches a report titled Human Rights Under Fire, Attacks and Violations in Cameroon's Struggle with Boko Haram. And Nigeria's president tells the French news agency his government is negotiating with militant group Boko Haram for the release of more than 200 schoolgirls. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Well, Pope Francis makes his first trip to the United States next week with stops in Washington, D.C., New York, and Philadelphia. During his visit, the pontiff will address a joint session of Congress and is expected to speak on the environment, among other issues. He recently released the encyclical or papal letter on the environment. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The encyclical entitled On Care for Our Common Home describes the planet as our sister, Mother Earth. He writes the Earth cries out because of the harm inflicted on her by irresponsible use and abuse of the goods with which God has endowed her. What's more, he says, is that people have come to see themselves as lords and masters, entitled to plunder her at will. Pope Francis's encyclical has been praised by many environmentalists, but criticized by those who say the Pope should concentrate on religious matters. Jerry Cotis will assist Pope Francis when he says Mass in Washington September 23rd at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. He's an official with Interfaith Power and Light, a nonprofit organization concerned about climate change. Cotis, a deacon, will aid in the Catholic sacrament of the Eucharist, in a sense, a sacrificial meal.
In the papal Mass, I have been given the wonderful blessing and opportunity to be at the Mass as a deacon, and I will be distributing Eucharist, either the body of Christ or one of the chalices with the blood of Christ, to the attendees.
Cotis is a retired environmental scientist, working for many years with the U.S. Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency. He says the Pope brings a fresh new energy to environmental issues, including climate change.
He calls things as they are, and he says these issues of climate change and our call to care for our common home are moral issues. He said technology is part of the answer, but we ourselves must change. We must transform our hearts. We must change and alter our lifestyles.
He says the Pope believes the United States must set an example as a protector of the environment. He says the U.S. consumes a lot of resources and contributes to climate change.
When we look to our brothers and sisters in Africa and other parts of the developing world, we have, he says, a tremendous obligation to see ourselves as one, to see ourselves united as part of this integral ecology. And therefore, we have to do more than our share to care for these issues and care for our brothers and sisters who are not as able to adapt and change.
Cotis is president of Our Lady of the Pines Catholic Church in Conifer, Colorado. He describes his religious beliefs and his scientific training as having a beautiful connection.
I've spent 35 years working on many of these issues from a scientific perspective and an environmental policy perspective. Now, with Pope Francis's leadership, I'm able to at least try to connect with people on a moral, religious basis, looking at our common connections from whatever faith tradition people are coming from. They see the call to care for God's creation in these traditions.
There have been many reports of Pope Francis having a degree in chemistry and is therefore a scientist. However, the publication National Catholic Reporter says that's not true. It says that Pope Francis studied chemistry and worked as a chemist prior to entering the seminary, but never graduated from university prior to entering the seminary. He has what it says is more like a certificate from a U.S. community college. However, the deacon says Francis can still speak to the issues.
the issues that we're talking about today in terms of our air, climate, water, these are issues that are life issues, he says. These are issues that affect the poor and the vulnerable first. And as a religious leader of faith and morals, he is perfectly aligned to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves.
The Pope takes his name from St. Francis of Assisi, who gave thanks for what he called Brother Sun and Sister Moon. In his encyclical on the environment, Pope Francis writes that people should approach nature and the environment with an openness to awe and wonder. Otherwise, he says, their attitude will be that of masters, consumers, ruthless exploiters, unable to set limits on their immediate needs. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. lawmakers of both major political parties tell VOA the United States must help address Syria's humanitarian crisis and the massive outpouring of migrants from the war-ravaged country. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman reports.
The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker, says the United States cannot turn a blind eye to the plight of Syrian migrants.
As a nation, I hate to say it, we bear some responsibility for what's happening. The type of things that are occurring are things you would never imagine would occur in the year 2015, maybe in 1015, but not 2015.
Like many Republicans, Corker says inaction by the Obama administration helped fuel the current crisis. Some Democrats admit that, in hindsight, a more assertive U.S. policy toward the conflict in Syria would have been beneficial. The main culprit, according to Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy, is Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Leahy applauded President Barack Obama's plan to admit 10,000 Syrian migrants.
The Europeans have been very good in stepping up, but we're going to have to also, we're going to have to take in the refugees here.
Fellow Democrat Tim Kaine called the administration's plan a good start.
When you compare that against what Lebanon is doing, that is housing over 1 million, Turkey over 2 million, Jordan 1 million, I just think that there's a lot more that we can do.
Senator Corker said President Obama has broad discretion in deciding how many Syrians to take in, but that Congress has a role to play as well, particularly when it comes to appropriating funds needed to support the effort. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
This is African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and it's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Straight Talk Africa. Shaka Ssali goes one-on-one with Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Sam Kutesa. The outgoing President of the United Nations General Assembly, the 69th session ends Tuesday. Mr. Kutesa will be with us live next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there are less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a recap of our top stories. The number of migrants crossing illegally into Hungary dropped steeply, while a few dozen were reported to have crossed into Croatia from Serbia. Amnesty International launches a report titled Human Rights Under Fire, Attacks and Violations in Cameroon's Struggle with Boko Haram. And Nigeria's president tells the French news agency his government is negotiating with militant group Boko Haram for the release of more than 200 schoolgirls. Coming up, we'll have music from Sierra Leone and our feature segment. I'm Kim Lewis, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you are kicking off today in South Africa.
Kim, I traveled to South Africa 5 years ago for coverage of the Football World Cup. In Johannesburg, I met my friend and VOA reporter Darren Taylor, who fired up his barbecue and treated me to a traditional South African braai. This evening, 2 days before the kickoff of the Rugby World Cup in England, the award-winning Taylor treats us to a smoking hot feature report on a South African rugby shrine.
The image you got from the animal where you don't come.
Silver-haired and always smiling, Benny Buertas has cut generations of men's hair in his shop in the working-class Johannesburg suburb of Newlands. A client chats with Buertas as others wait their turn for a haircut. Among them, a burly bearded mechanic wearing oil-stained boots and the suited multimillionaire owner of a shopping mall. What attracts such a diverse clientele is an amazing collection of rugby paraphernalia. On the walls and ceilings are thousands of autographed rugby jerseys, caps, pens, scarves, balls, glasses, flags, all hunted down by Buertas or donated to him by rugby fans across the world. The barber says his obsession with all things rugby started with a friend's joke almost 50 years ago.
He said, why doesn't you start making it not only a plain barber shop? And from that day, it's just growing and growing and growing.
Buertas' rugby gear overflows into the back of his shop and his nearby house. Over the years, Buertas has cut many Springbok legends' hair. They too were happy to donate valuable memorabilia.
Like when Pete Malong, he died now a month ago. I was honest to know him very well. From Fanny King, beautiful rugby players, good rugby players. Then my oldest Transvaal player, Tini Matthysen.
One of his favorite items is a 19th century rugby ball from England. A massive leather laced oval, about three times the size of a modern ball. Buertas says his business just looks like a barbershop, when it's actually South Africa's only true rugby museum.
My book collection is from 1818, from the start of rugby. That's the oldest, is that book. And then I got a photo there from 1912, 1913 of the Springboks.
Then he gestures towards a green bottle covered in dust. Its label is falling apart, but on it is the famous symbol of South African rugby, a jumping springbok antelope.
And then I got a bottle of wine. He's more than 100 years of Transvaal.
Open it.
No. I can give you a glass of water, but not my wine.
Buertas' colleague, Louis de Hart, says many rugby fans, men, women and children, visit Benny's not for a haircut, but just to talk rugby and to stare in wonder at the memorabilia.
They all, like, have a debate about the teams, and sometimes they quite a bit of an argue, not like physical, but that happens a lot, yeah.
Sailing up, playing very deep, maybe a little bit too deep to cut off.
It's a Saturday afternoon, and some of Buerta's die-hard patrons watch a local rugby game on TV inside the barbershop. At times like these, they often share their fondest rugby memories. Peter Wilson remembers his first schoolboy rugby game in the 1940s.
I was so stupid. I was a front ranker. I took the ball, and when the chap came rushing to me, I threw the ball over his head and ran around him to catch it again. I didn't even know about the forward pass. I made a proper idiot of myself.
At Benny's, there's cautious optimism about the Springboks' chances of capturing an unprecedented third Rugby World Cup title.
What I always say, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog.
Outside his shop, Buertas fires up the barbecue on the pavement and the party starts, naturally, with a CD of some of South Africa's most loved rugby tunes.
What it feels like to dummy into sidestep with a leather ball in your hand.
Back inside, Buertas gazes at a faded photo. It's Loftus Versfeld Stadium, Pretoria, 1968, and Springbok scrum half Davie de Villiers has just scored a try to destroy the British Lions. The barber whispers, "Do it again, boys. Do it again." Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The 20-team Rugby World Cup will officially kick off Friday at Twickenham Stadium in London, where England will host Fiji in the opening match. Neighbours Namibia and South Africa will represent Africa in the tournament, which will culminate October 31st when the final is played, also at Twickenham Stadium. Namibia is in Pool C for the Rugby World Cup, along with Georgia, Tonga, Argentina, and New Zealand. The Namibians will play two-time World Cup champion New Zealand September 24th in their opening match at Olympic Stadium in London. The Springboks of South Africa, as my buddy Darren Taylor mentioned, are bidding for an unprecedented third World Cup title after lifting the trophy in 1995 and 2007. The Springboks are in Pool B, along with Samoa, Scotland, Japan, and the United States. The South Africans will play Japan Saturday in their opening match in Brighton, England. Organizers of this eighth edition of the Rugby World Cup say it'll be the best and biggest ever. The chief executive officer of World Rugby is the Australian Brett Gosper.
It certainly will be a record breaker on many fronts, but for all of us, we've never really lost sight of the fact that we want to make it the best possible experience for the teams coming and for the fans arriving, of which there'll be close to 500,000. Certainly, it's going to be the most accessible tournament, Rugby World Cup, ever. In addition to the record ticket sales, it will be the most viewed Rugby World Cup, with 103 broadcast licensees in 205 territories carrying 23,000 hours to 772 million households worldwide. That's upward of 15% increase on previous World Cup 2011. We've favoured reach and engagement through free-to-air platforms. We've worked very hard at that. We want maximum exposure, in particular in markets like India, China, Brazil and the USA. Worth noting that there'll be, for the first time, 24 live matches in Germany, 22 live matches in China.
That's Brett Gosper, the CEO of World Rugby, and he was speaking in London. And Brett certainly sounds excited about the Rugby World Cup, which kicks off Friday in London. Now let's go to Congo Brazzaville for an All Africa Games update. Senegal will go against Burkina Faso in Friday's gold medal match in the men's football tournament. The Senegalese will host the Africa Under 23 Cup of Nations tournament at the end of November, and they look ready for that competition, which doubles as an Olympic qualifying tournament after a 3-1 victory over host Congo Brazzaville Tuesday in the semifinals. Ibrahima Keita had a brace for the Senegalese boys, finding the net in the 36th and 82nd minutes. Burkina Faso beat Nigeria by that same 3-1 scoreline in the other semifinal in Brazzaville. Sidney Mohamed Silla had a brace for the Burkinabe. Sidney scored in the 12th and 79th minutes. And with their braces on Tuesday, Sidney Mohamed Silla and Ibrahima Keita are now the joint leading scorers in the All-Africa Games men's competition with 3 goals apiece. Meanwhile, Ghana will go against Cameroon in Friday's final in the All-Africa Games women's football tournament. The Ghanaian girls edged Ivory Coast Tuesday 1-0 on a goal by Samira Suleiman in the 15th minute. And Cameroon beat Nigeria 2-1 in the second semifinal. Let's take a look now at the All-Africa Games medals table. Egypt and South Africa have dominated the table in recent editions of the All-Africa Games, and it looks like 2015 will be no different. Heading into Wednesday's action, the Egyptians were dominating the medals table. The Egyptians had 56 gold, 45 silver, and 47 bronze for a total of 148 medals. South Africa was second on the medals table going into Wednesday with 38 gold, 34 silver, and 28 bronze for a total of 100 medals. Two North African countries are third and fourth on the medals table. Algeria with 30 gold, 27 silver, and 27 bronze for a total of 84 medals. And Tunisia, fourth on the medals table in Brazzaville, 17 gold, 19 silver, and 27 bronze for a total of 63 medals. Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And on that note, I'll say tweet me when you can. Tweet, tweet, tweet. I always enjoyed the feedback on both Twitter and Facebook. I'm VOA Sunny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sunny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Fridays, Sunny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 17:30 hours UTC. Right here on The Voice of America. Well, coming up, a South Sudan hip-hop artist and actor creates a superfood that he says adds pep to your step. And the World Food Program says the situation of the internally displaced persons in Chad is very critical. First, here's the Sierra Leone Refugee All-Stars with Toma Tete Imba Akala. We'll be right back. Sierra Leone Refugee All-Stars. Well, South Sudan hip-hop artist and actor Emmanuel Jal wants to help you add some pep to your step. Jal has created what he says is a superfood that is packed with vitamins and minerals. He says taking his food supplement daily will help people to be healthier and more energetic throughout the day. South Sudan In Focus reporter Ayen Bior explains.
Jal has already scored success in the music industry and on the silver screen. Now he wants to take a bite out of the food industry with a new product called Jalgua. He says Jalgua is a superfood that you can do just about anything with.
You can put it in water, drink it, and move. You can make little round balls like chocolates, with it, mix it with chocolate. You can create energy balls with it. You can create smoothies. You can drink it just with milk. You can put it in a soup. You can put it in your yogurt. so people can get creative with it.
Jalgwa is a powder mixture made from organic sorghum and moringa. Sorghum is a staple food in South Sudan. Scientific studies have found it to be rich in antioxidants and plant chemicals that are known to prevent cancer and cardiovascular illness. Moringa is a tropical plant that is used in traditional medicine to treat everything from anemia to diabetes, to diarrhea, to kidney stones, and thyroid disorders. Jal says when he was growing up in Warup State, he ate a lot of sorghum and moringa. He says he came up with the idea of concocting jalgwa about 3 years ago when the stress of his career as an actor and singer began to take a toll on his health. He knew he had to change his eating habits when his doctor warned him that he was at risk of developing high blood pressure. Jal did not want to turn to Western medicine or modern practices to help regain his health. He decided instead to go back to his roots, starting with gluten-free, nutrient-rich sorghum.
If I was in South Sudan, sorghum is what we're born of. And a lot of South Sudanese don't know this grain. They're living it. So sorghum is a grain that protects people because of the high antioxidants it has and vitamins and minerals in it. It's why it's a very important grain. And so I'm trying to bring it back to life. So South Sudanese or all Africans out there should understand this grain grew in Africa for a reason.
Jal decided to pair sorghum with moringa. He wanted his new superfood to be simple to use and portable.
So I developed a packet that I can actually travel around on tour.
One serving of jalgwa contains 45% of the daily requirement of vitamin C and nearly 1.5 times the daily needs of iron and the B group vitamin, thiamine. The mixture contains
no preservatives, there's no chemical being put in the processing.
Jalgwa is available for purchase online and can ship anywhere in the world, Jal says. And using jalgwa will not only do you good, but will also help others because a portion of profits from sales of Jal's new superfood will be donated to charity. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
During the past 2 months, more than 40,000 people have been displaced in the Lake Chad region due to Boko Haram-related violence, says Adele Sarkozy of the World Food Program. She visited some of the 22 sites for the internally displaced between Bole and Bagassola in Chad. She tells Ricky Shryock the situation of the displaced in these areas is critical.
In the past 2 months, they have an influx of IDPs, so people who have been living on the islands of Lake Chad region, and they've been attacked by Boko Haram, so they moved to the mainland. Just to give you an idea, so before June in Chad, we had something like 11,000 IDPs, so people who have been impacted by the Boko Haram crisis. And now, so since July, we have 41 new ones, so it's like 51,000 IDPs in total, but 41,000 of them have been displaced in the past 2 months.
Are people saying that the violence is getting worse around the area? What are people thinking is the cause of the influx?
It's basically the violence. So I've been speaking to a lot of women, and they were saying how they have had their husbands or their children being killed in front of them in sometimes. So they're very traumatized. They fled using the boats, the pirogues here. Some of them actually said they just jumped into the water and they were swimming to get to the mainland, and they were swimming for 3 to 6 hours to get to safety. And the conditions are very dire. I mean, they are staying on these sort of temporary IDP sites. There's about 22 of them on the mainland. They just mushroomed in the past 2 months and they got nothing. I mean, even the tents, they're just very flimsy. I don't know if I can even call them tents. They're just sort of like constructions made out of sort of sticks and covered with different sort of bits and pieces of plastic or fabric. People have been saying they have no food. The host communities have been very helpful, and I've spoken to women from the host communities, and one of them was saying how if I came 3 or 4 weeks ago, she would have been able to show me her crop. She had corn, and now she had nothing because she shared it with the people who have been displaced. So it's all sorts of, you know, people from all sorts of walks of life being affected, or traders in Bole where I was who were saying now they can't really sell their goods, their crops, because people have no money.
What is available to people right now besides the generosity of the people who are already there?
So they have very little to nothing because they are not getting help anymore from the host communities because their resources have been depleted as well. So they are in need of help as well. The people that I've spoken to, they said they received food from WFP a few weeks ago, but what they received, it's gone now, or they have very little left. We were able in August to help about 20,000 of the newly displaced, but as I mentioned, there is double, the number is double, so it's like 41,000 people, but we are not able to reach out to all of them because of lack of funding.
That was Adele Sarkozy, a spokesperson for the World Food Programme for West and Central Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Shryak from N'Djamena, Chad. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next is our VOA editorial. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Working, and our engineer, Suleiman Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late December 2013, Egyptian security forces raided a hotel room that housed the makeshift remote studio of three journalists employed by the Qatar-based Al Jazeera news network. The three journalists, Australian Peter Grest, Canadian Mohamed Fahmy, and Egyptian Bahar Mohamed, were arrested and charged with airing falsified footage intended to damage Egyptian national security, operating without a license, and supporting ousted President Mohamed Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood, a group considered to be a terrorist organization by the Egyptian government. The three men were tried and found guilty twice. In June of 2014, they were found guilty. Two were sentenced to 7 years imprisonment. One received a 10-year sentence. Citing lack of evidence, an appellate court ordered a retrial. That process began in January 2015. The three were again found guilty and, on August 29th, were sentenced to 3 years in prison. The United States is deeply disappointed and concerned by the verdict handed down by an Egyptian court to the three Al Jazeera journalists, Mohamed Fahmy, Bahar Mohamed, and Peter Grest, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby. The freedom of the press to investigate, report, and comment, even when its perspective is unpopular or disputed, is fundamental to any free society and essential to democratic development. We urge the government of Egypt to take all available measures to redress this verdict, which undermines the very freedom of expression necessary for stability and development. By finding these three men guilty, the government of Egypt has signaled that journalists can and will be prosecuted and imprisoned for simply doing their job of reporting the news. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that as of July 1, 2015, at least 18 journalists are in prison for their reporting in Egypt. Even one is too many.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
On Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sali goes one-on-one with Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Sam Kutesa. The outgoing president of the United Nations General Assembly, the 69th session ends Tuesday. Mr. Kutesa will be with us live next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.